Hey everybody, welcome to a second edition of the Built on the Border podcast. This is Tom Randolph with me as always, my friend, co-host, Tommy Watson. Tommy, how you doing?
Good, how are you?
I'm doing well, doing well. We hope all our listeners out there had a great weekend, managed to stay warm as we are still experiencing winter weather up into March here in Kansas City. How was your weekend, Tommy?
It was pretty good.
Yeah. And you guys had some games that you played in this weekend, correct?
Yes, my grade school team that I helped coach came, I'd like to think, close to winning, but losing by 16 is not that close.
No, it's not close at all, but it's the effort that counts, so hopefully that was at a high level. Our squad actually made it to the semifinal round. I was unfortunately not able to attend. I was traveling. I was out on the road, but they went to a 5-overtime game. That's incredible. I mean, at that age, playing 5 overtimes.
It was a grade school classic, man.
It was a grade school classic.
But at least you were doing something positive. You were on the road.
I was on the road.
North Carolina.
That's true.
Pretending to do research for the show.
Exactly. Pretending that I was an actual sports reporter and a journalist, which is something I actually told somebody at a bar that night. I went to Durham, North Carolina. Flew into Charlotte and then into Raleigh-Durham Airport on Thursday night. And got to experience Duke firsthand. My good friend Ross Santee, shout out to Ross, was kind enough to bring me out and put me up for 4 days. And I got to experience all Duke had to offer, including Duke versus Syracuse at Cameron Indoor Stadium on Saturday night.
That sounds fun.
Yeah, it was pretty awesome. I got to watch Jahlil Okafor and Tyus Jones play. Jahlil Okafor looks like the number one pick in the draft. He at least looked like it on Saturday night. He's a fantastic post player. And then also some, you know, Midwest relevancy. Jason Tatum, the forward out of Chaminade Preparatory School in St. Louis, was in attendance. He's one of the highest ranked recruits for the class of 2016. And he looked like he was having a good time out at the game. So it was cool to see a recruit kind of have that experience. It's relevant because his dad coaches at SLU, and he's considering St. Louis University. I know most of my fellow Billiken fans would love for him to come and attend SLU. He's also considering Kansas, so it'd be a really nice grab for Bill Self for the class of 2016. He's a great forward. He can play all three guard positions. I've watched him in his film, but it looked like he really liked being at Duke. They gave him a pretty warm reception about 3 minutes left in the second half. They had signs for him and everything. So he definitely got the all-star treatment.
Well, I don't know how he could go into a top program like that and like not look like he was interested.
You'd right.
I could have zero interest in going to Duke, and I would look like I'm about ready to sign a letter of
intent. Yeah, well, I mean, it's an awesome campus. You wouldn't think that Cameron Indoor is a basketball arena from the outside. It looks like a college, like classroom building.
I thought it looked like a castle.
Yeah, well, it kind of looks like a castle, kind of looks like a classroom building. But it's not much bigger than, like, Rock U's gym here. So it was a really tight experience because I was packed in like sardines with a bunch of other Duke students. But
it's kind of atmosphere you want in a college basketball.
Yeah, absolutely. I would say the only other time I've been in an environment like that is a KU game at Allen Fieldhouse. And Cameron didn't come close to that, but it was still pretty impressive. But so enough about my weekend. But we're going to get right into the hot topics from this week. The biggest one, which we've been kind of discussing a lot over the last couple days since the announcement came out, is the Chiefs extending a franchise tender, or franchise tag, excuse me, to Justin Houston. So that tender is worth $13.2 million, and it gives the Chiefs flexibility, kind of, because they can reach a deal with Justin Houston. If they reach a long-term deal with him by July 15th, then they can sign him to a long-term deal. If not, they have to wait till after the 2015 season. But short-term, it doesn't give us a lot of flexibility because it ate up pretty much the rest of our remaining cap space.
No, we're over the cap now. So they announced the salary cap recently, and it is, for the NFL, it is $143.28 million this year.
Right, the new salary cap was announced today.
Right now, the Chiefs are sitting at $157 million in salary cap. So they're going to have to do some work.
Yeah, and it's funny. So that difference there is about $14 million. You know who else's contract is worth $14 million?
No one right off the top of my head. I know.
Wide receiver Dwayne Bowe. The Chiefs have been strongly considering cutting ties with or restructuring his deal. So you cut Dwayne Bowe, that frees up some of that cap space. So what are your thoughts on Dwayne Bowe's current situation?
It would be nice to cut him, but if we cut him, then we have no wide receivers.
Right.
And even though, you know, we're going to build through the draft, we're definitely drafting wide receivers this year.
Mm.
But in my mind, I think we have to keep Bowe. I think there's no way about it. Because we're going to need at least someone we know has experience, you know, on the NFL level, albeit he's not that great, but he'd be a solid number two on anyone else's team.
I agree, and I think John Dorsey kind of came to his defense last week, talked about how important he is to the team. Talked about how Dwayne Bowe does a lot of things that you don't necessarily see on the highlights, that you don't see that show up on the tape all the time, like blocking on running downs and being where he needs to be on his routes on third down to open up other plays downfield. My concern is that I think we have seen the best of Dwayne Bowe. I don't think he's worth $14 million. I think what the Chiefs need to do is explain to Dwayne, if he's really all about the team and making sacrifices for the team, he needs to sacrifice some of that salary so we can afford to go out and get other guys to shore up our team. We're lacking in a lot of different areas. Wide receiver, we're going to be weaker at offensive line, especially if we aren't able to sign Rodney Hudson to an extension. Eric Fisher hasn't really panned out, so we need a lot more support on the offensive line. Our secondary is going to have to improve, and our linebacking core is going to have to get shored up as well. We've seen guys like DeVito and Johnson, they're coming off injuries, so we don't know what their production levels are going to be like next year. So I think while signing Justin Houston is great, it doesn't give us a whole lot of flexibility to do what we want to do in free agency. So the Chiefs have to look towards the draft and address a lot of those positions of need. So it's a big draft for the Chiefs. We possibly have four conditional compensatory picks. That's a hard word. And we also have our first second-round pick since 2012. The last two have gone to the 49ers.
It's kind of a big deal. I think those second-round picks are a little underrated because everyone just thinks of the first-round pick as the most important, but I think a lot of good players get drafted in the second round.
Absolutely. So I kind of have some thoughts on what the Chiefs should do. I'm going to go against the grain here. I don't know that the Chiefs should draft a wide receiver with their number one, with their first round pick. I think maybe looking towards an offensive lineman to shore up that tackle position. Maybe draft a tackle, have him play guard for the first couple of years, understand those pass blocking schemes, and then draft somebody like a Devin Smith in the second round. Devin Smith out of Ohio State had a really productive year. Still needs to work on his route running, I think, but he has a very explosive talent, lots of deep threat capabilities downfield. I think that's something that Chiefs showed no vertical threat in the offense this past year. I think he would give us a target a la Torrey Smith that you can kind of just chuck the ball up to and have him go up there and get it. Now, that's not necessarily the strengths of our quarterback, Alex Smith, but it'd be nice to open up that aspect of the offense.
It's hard to tell whether or not that's one of his strengths because he hasn't had, at least with us, he hasn't had that deep threat. And even in San Francisco, he didn't have it really.
That's true. That's true, but I think it's going to be important to surround the good talent we have on offense, like Travis Kelce and Jamaal Charles, with some secondary weapons that they can throw to take some pressure off of those two guys.
Yeah, you know, and I agree with your assessment that we should take a lineman in the first round because I personally think Rodney Hudson will not be back with the team next year.
I don't think so either.
He's played well. He's been our most consistent lineman over the last couple years. And I believe I read on one website that he was ranked as the number three offensive center this year.
Yeah, so he's probably going to be looking
He's looking for an upgrade.
Okay.
And I have one more thought on the Justin Houston situation. I think that every year we don't re-sign him to a long-term deal, it means it's 1 year closer to him not coming back.
That's true. I think with a guy like Justin Houston, who obviously has the potential to be the face of the franchise for the next decade,
mm-hmm.
You know, be like the next Derek Thomas, I think it's important to show your commitment to that player early on.
Yeah.
I think we've done that with players before. We want to make sure we don't miss the boat with Justin Houston here.
I think Dorsey's only mistake so far in his tenure as our general manager is not re-signing Houston last year to a long-term deal.
Right.
And I just think we need to pay him.
Yeah,
and he should be our top priority.
Yeah, and in retrospect, he probably would have been more affordable last year. So I think Dorsey definitely, it's going to be a challenge to you know, work around this cap flexibility, but it's something that'll definitely develop, as the off season progresses. Like I said, the Chiefs have until July 15th to reach a long-term deal, and if they don't, well, then he becomes a free agent, and we have to revisit this situation all over again. And I know that's something that you and I personally would like to avoid. I think Chiefs fans everywhere would like to avoid.
I am terrified of that scenario.
Yeah. All right, so we're going to move on into the talking about the Royals. We recently found out last week, and you wrote a great story about it, Mike Sweeney was inducted into the Royals Hall of Fame, or they announced that he'll be inducted into the Royals Hall of Fame last week, and they'll have that ceremony later this year. I think that's a game that you and I definitely want to attend, him being one of the cornerstones of the Royals during the, let's say painful years of the franchise.
I don't know if we'd call him a cornerstone or just the stone.
The stone, yeah.
The only consistent part of that late 90s, early 2000s, Kansas City Royals team, and
yeah.
I don't think there could be a more deserving former player right now that's not already in the Hall of Fame to be in the Royals Hall of Fame.
I would 100% agree with you. You know, he was the captain, I think, for a couple of years.
I believe it was 03 to 07.
07, yeah, that's right. And he was pretty much the only bat that produced on a consistent basis during that decade of kind of terror that seemed to be the Royals.
Awful.
But that kind of got us to talking about some an interesting topic for us both. And that would be, which current players on the Royals roster do you think have Royals Hall of Fame potential, not Hall of Fame potential? And I think there was one that we had a consensus, and that was
Alex Gordon,
absolutely. Alex Gordon, he's been with the Royals for almost a decade now. He has been... Well, to be honest, the first couple of years of his tenure with the Royals were a little frustrating. I think you and I were waiting for his talent to develop. But in the last couple of seasons, he's been the face of the franchise, and he's kind of been the face of the franchise throughout the process that culminated in this last year, which was an appearance in the 2014 World Series.
Yeah, Alex Gordon kind of has two different careers going right now. Third baseman Alex Gordon, nowhere close to Royals Hall of Fame.
No.
Let alone being on the team right now.
But
left fielder Alex Gordon, he's definitely in my mind.
Yeah,
book.
I would think so. And, you know, he's not one of those guys who's, you know, real vocal, who's been, you know, talked about as a real vocal leader, but he leads by example.
Definitely.
Grit and determination, and some great news out of spring training this week. He started throwing and taking swings for the first time since his wrist surgery, and he says he feels great. So that's always good news for Royals fans. But we also had some guys we didn't necessarily come to a consensus on. This first one, I think you would be consensus pick on it, but we need to see more from his career.
Yeah.
And I think that Salvador Perez is kind of on the right track. Two gold gloves now for our catcher, Salvi. He's shown really great production at the plate, at least he did in the first half of last season.
Yeah.
Kind of touched on the drop and decline that he's had, but I think that's been overuse of him at the catcher position.
Yeah,
I think they need to find some breaks for him during the season, some games where he sits out so we can get fresh and get healthy. But I think Salvador Perez is going to be a cornerstone of the Royals franchise for hopefully the next decade. And so I would love to see him be in the Royals Hall of Fame. And if we can keep him in Kansas City for a long time, I think that's definitely going to be the case. But you had somebody that you also had in mind.
I do. My person has not necessarily earned it yet, but I think they're going to get on the Salvador Perez track to be on the track to be in the Royals Hall of Fame.
Okay.
And anyways, my player is Jordano Ventura.
Ace.
Just because I love this kid.
Yeah.
I witnessed him firsthand in Game 6 of the World Series last year. Loved everything about it. And I think he's got what it takes.
Absolutely. I was at that Game 6 with you. And then I had a chance to see him also pitch in Game 2. And he was lights out in both games. The Royals gave him a lot of run support those two games. But he's just a guy that exudes that swagger and that confidence.
Exactly.
And he throws heat.
No kidding.
But I think this is something you and I talked about. One thing that concerns us both is his mechanics.
Yeah.
He's a little wild. He's a little crazy. He kind of puts his whole body into every pitch.
He looks like he's overthrowing.
Yeah.
If you ever watch, he's got a very extreme motion,
mm-hmm.
which hopefully will not come back to bite him.
Yeah, and we've discussed, it's one of those things where you've got to make sure he manages innings properly. Same with Salvador Perez. I think that's going to be the key to making sure that these guys have long, you know, productive careers with the Royals, is managing their innings, making sure we're not leaning on them too heavily. But I'm excited for those two guys. I mean, to have that 1-2 punch, one from the mound and one from the catcher position, and then hopefully we can keep some of the other big pieces like Kane and Moose and Hosmer down the line. that's a situation that almost as dark as the Justin Houston free agent scenario, where we aren't able to keep all that awesome young talent that we've been riding the last year and a half.
I think I would cry if any of those people left.
I think I would too.
I secretly cried when Billy Butler left. So,
Miss you, Billy. We hope we wish you nothing but the best in Oakland. But yeah, when you see those guys that are kind of the face of your team for a couple of years, it's tough. Mm-hmm. I remember watching Billy Butler in the All-Star game a few years ago when it was here in Kansas City. And I also remember booing Robinson Cano off the field the night that he competed in the Home Run Derby, in which Robinson Cano, that backstabbing Benedict Arnold, didn't vote Billy Butler into the Home Run Derby, didn't get a single home run. And I'm glad he didn't.
He got what he deserved.
But moving away from baseball now, we're going to talk about the week in college basketball, specifically for the Kansas Jayhawks. When we were recording this pod last Monday, they were getting ready to face off against the Kansas State Wildcats, in which they lost in very heartbreaking fashion. But then they rebounded for a pretty solid performance against Texas. They defeated the Longhorns in a pretty high-stakes game. There was
a lot riding on it this week.
Right, there was a lot riding on that game, and they delivered. They looked strong, and once again, for the second straight game, Perry Ellis had a fantastic performance. He was actually named the Phillips 66 Big 12 Player of the Week for the third time this season, and it's looking like Ellis might be contending for that Big 12 Player of the Year honor. So that was nice to see. He was strong in both performance against Kansas State and against Texas. This week he averaged double-double with 26 points, 11 rebounds per game as we split those two contests against Kansas State and Texas.
You know, he's actually been pretty solid, too, for about the last month.
Yeah.
His only downside, and I don't even know, or his only bad play that I've seen in the last month, unfortunately, was that missed layup against West Virginia, which is not even that bad. It was a difficult shot. It just looked so easy, and it just didn't fall.
We can break that down, you know, till we're blue in the face. Another interesting news story for the Jayhawks this week. Kelly Oubre was named the finalist for the 2015 Wayman Tillsdale, Freshman of the Year Award. He's one of 10 finalists. I don't think he's going to win the award because you've got studs like Jahlil Okafor and other guys competing for that award. But it's nice to see him recognized for that, considering how much of a rough start he got off to with his tenure with the Jayhawks. Another freshman, though, that has been pretty lackluster thus far this year, a lot of up and down performances, has been Cliff Alexander, and it's likely that we might have seen him in his last game in a Jayhawk uniform. There's not a whole lot yet about the story that's been released, but we do know that a lawyer has been hired for Cliff Alexander as they look into some NCAA violation possibilities. There's not a whole lot out on it yet. We don't really know the whole story, but it's kind of become the culmination of what this season has been for Cliff Alexander. Some games he shows a lot of potential. Other games he shows that he has no understanding of the offense and really where he is on the floor. It looks like every time he catches the ball, he wants to dunk it. He's a very raw offensive talent, but he's still a big body who can play above the rim. I think his loss is going to hurt the Jayhawks more than we realize because he gave us a lot of spark and a lot of intensity in the post. And guys whose frames aren't built like Alexander's, like Landon Lucas, are going to have to step up and play a more important role. What are your thoughts on the whole Cliff Alexander situation?
Well, I think that the lack of detail about him not playing right now basically means he's done for the season.
Yeah.
I don't foresee him coming back at all.
Yeah, and it's unfortunate because, you know, he was projected to be a top 10 pick by Chad Ford initially in this draft coming up this summer. But now he's fallen all the way out of the lottery. They're projecting him somewhere in the 20s. Right now, he's currently got him projected going 24 to the Dallas Mavericks, which would be a good fit for him, I think. It gives him some time to develop and would give them a solid athlete on the floor to kind of replace what they lost in that trade for Rajon Rondo. They had to trade away Brandon Wright. But I won't bore you guys with the NBA stuff right now. But it's going to hurt the Jayhawks not having that depth going into the Big 12 tournament. They play their second-to-last game against West Virginia tomorrow night. If they win that game, they win another consecutive Big 12 title, or at least a share of one.
Yep.
So we're excited for that. But they have two tough tests ahead of them before they enter the Big 12 tournament, the first game being against West Virginia. The second game is going to be against Oklahoma. And if the Jayhawks lose to West Virginia, then Oklahoma can actually win the title
outright
on Saturday. So it's an interesting storyline. What are your thoughts going into this week of KU basketball?
Well, you know, I don't know if I want to make a prediction on this week because I made a prediction about that K-State game and it did not go the way I wanted it to.
No, it didn't.
So I'm confident the Jayhawks can close out and at least clinch a share of the title, but I will not say much further than that. But what about you?
I think it's going to be two big tests. One game is going to be at home. That's against West Virginia. I know that they want to get back at the Mountaineers for the last second game winner that they hit. Statton for West Virginia hit that shot. I'd like to see a little bit of a stronger defensive effort from Frank Mason. That's something we've been kind of harping on all year, at least in our conversations about KU basketball. I think these are going to be two tough challenges, but I think Bill Self has been prepping all season for this point. This Big 12 conference, we've said it's been weak this year, but that's not really the case. I think there's just so much strength at the top that these really good teams are beating up on each other. You know, they have a close loss to Iowa State on January 17th. They have a close loss to Oklahoma State on February 7th. And then they have two heartbreakers against West Virginia and then against K-State. I still think this team, while they lack a lot of consistency, shows a lot of promise. And I think if we can ride Perry Ellis's scoring for the next couple of weeks going through the Big 12 tournament, I think we have a chance to win out. And if we win that Big 12 tournament title, who knows? Maybe we're looking at a number one seed. I think that at the top, you've got Duke, you've got Virginia, you've got Kentucky, and you've got Villanova in those top four seeds right now, according to Joe Lunardi's bracketology. But I think that Kansas can move in there, considering they have played the toughest schedule in the country thus far this year. And their only two losses outside of the Big 12 were blowouts to Kentucky and then to Temple. That Temple game I don't even want to talk about. But I think these next couple weeks are going to show what kind of Jayhawks we can expect going into the tournament.
I agree.
They are currently 23-6. We're first in the Big 12. I think this team has an opportunity to go out and make a statement this week. I would love to see some great performances by Seldon. I'd love to see a great performance by Mason in these next two games. These are games that we can win, but we got to show that consistency, not just in the first half, but in the second half as well.
I think if they're going to make a splash in the NCAA tournament, I think it starts this weekend.
Yeah, I think postseason starts now. And we are in March. The madness has begun. So I'm excited for a really strong slate of games coming up. Tuesday and Saturday are going to be big tests, and then we move back to Kansas City for the Big 12 tournament. Are you excited about that, being here again this year?
I am so glad to be back for that.
Yeah.
That's one of the best experiences of my life. Just not even going to the tournament. I've never actually been to a tournament game, but just being in the city and being able to watch it, it's just nuts.
Yeah, I think our plans are going to be rally the crew together, head down to that area down by the Sprint Center, enjoy the Power and Light districts during that Big 12 tournament, and hopefully maybe by chance we stumble upon some tickets and get to catch some Big 12 action. You know, Big 12 has been one of the best conferences in basketball this year. I think them and the ACC are kind of right neck and neck.
Yep.
In terms of conference supremacy. I'm excited. It's going to be a fun atmosphere. Kansas City really gets live for those events. I know a lot of our listeners are going to be looking forward to catching those games as well. And we have joining us for the first time on the Built on the Border podcast, our good friend. He'll be on for a couple of these. Mr. Broderick Johnson. Brody, how you doing?
Doing good, guys. Thanks for having me. Really excited to kind of give my input on all of this. Now I'm a recent graduate of the University of Missouri from Columbia. The Missouri Tigers, a much better school than any of these guys know.
Yeah, we're looking forward to have Brody come in and offer some of his fresh perspective, being a Mizzou Tigers fan. Give us some insight on SEC football as we get into the football season in the fall. Give us some insight on Missouri basketball as they kind of try to rebuild that mm-hmm. program. What are your thoughts on the Mizzou basketball season thus far?
Well, it's been, I mean, there's no other way to say it. It's just a disappointment. And I guess what everyone is looking forward to is Kim Anderson establishing himself. And I think that Kim Anderson models the team and its
makeup.
Yeah.
Similar to that you'd mentioned of Fred Hoiberg.
Yes.
Yeah, Fred Hoiberg at Iowa State. Yeah, I think it'd be nice to see Mizzou kind of be another powerhouse like they used to be back in the time of Mike Anderson and briefly with Frank Haith.
And I think that if they do establish themselves, hopefully in the next few years, the border war could be reestablished.
Yeah, that'd be nice. I think that's something that KU fans and Mizzou fans alike have wanted to see reestablish that rivalry, both on the hardwood and on the football field. I think it's going to be nice to see the KU football program be rebuilt and then the Mizzou basketball program rebuilt. But now we are going to move on to a segment we promised you guys last week. Tommy, you want to go to the fridge? We are going to sample some Boulevard Brewery products. We weren't able to get our hands on the new seasonal beer, the Saison that they just released. Apparently, they're sold out almost everywhere. That was
without a surprise.
Yeah, without a surprise. But we did get some pop-up IPA. We're going to crack into that now and just enjoy that while we keep on talking here on the pod. This is our favorite brewery. It's a Kansas City tradition to drink Boulevard beer. I also want to talk about a place that some of our listeners on the pod may have never been before. Last Saturday, we took a trip over to the Woodyard Barbecue over in Merriam, Kansas. We got to sample some Boulevard Brewing products, and we had some good barbecue as well. You guys want to talk about that? Tommy, what were your thoughts on Woodyard?
I thought it was pretty good. I know when I go to a new barbecue place, I always start with brisket, and I will say it was delicious. So yeah. I would definitely like to go back there again so I can try something else.
Yeah, they have very good burn ends. Their sausage is very good. Brody, what were your thoughts on it?
Well, I really enjoyed the atmosphere of it.
Yeah.
It's a lumberyard.
Yeah, it's really cool. It's a lumberyard, and there's a lot of outdoor seating. It's kind of a hidden gem.
Mm-hmm.
But I noticed I'm going to the St. Elizabeth's auction this Saturday, and they have a package you can buy for Woodyard Barbecue. It's for 20 people. They give you 7 cases of beer. So I'm thinking maybe
between 3 people.
Between 3 people.
That'll be
the 3 of us.
Let's try and get that.
Yeah, I think we're going to try and shoot for that. But let's go ahead and have a sip of this delicious pop-up session IPA. This is the little brother to the double wide and single wide. It's supposed to be the lighter of the 3 IPAs.
I will read you guys the description while you taste it. It says, Boulevard Pop-Up Session IPA joined its big brother single wide and double wide in our trailer park of hop-centric beers. This session model is built for frequent excursions with a very drinkable character and relatively low bitterness tucked behind a big, fruity hop aroma.
Yeah, and I'd say that's a pretty accurate description. I do like that it's low bitterness, but you still kind of get that fruity flavor. Kind of reminds me a little bit of the 80 Acre Hoppy Wheat. You kind of get that fruity taste, but then again, it sneaks up on you with that IPA. But it is lighter. I do like that. I do like that about it. I'm not to say I don't like the single wide and the double wide, but those can kind of be overpowering. But when you want a lighter beer, this is definitely the way to go. I definitely see us having a few of these out of Kauffman this summer as we go to some games. And we actually have our first established game on the calendar this year. We're going to go see the Kansas City Royals play the Oakland Athletics in their second home series this season. And we're going to get to see the Golden Glove Awards ceremony, which we're pretty excited about.
Yeah, don't be surprised to see me trying to run on the field and go give Billy Butler a hug. I miss him so much.
Yeah, we're going to miss him too. So we're going to move over into our worst of the week segment, which we do every week. This week, there were some pretty clear-cut choices, at least from a Kansas City standpoint. For those of you that were able to watch the game, KU versus K-State last Monday, there was a little bit of an incident after the game. The K-State fans and their excitement toppling their cross-state rivals. Jayhawks, they rushed the floor and they kind of got a little physical with some of the players out there. A K-State student actually, while running on the floor, runs and just blatantly bumps Jamari Traylor right on the shoulder, kind of knocking him off balance a little bit. I was a little surprised. He ended up getting cited for disorderly conduct after voluntarily meeting with the university police, but I thought it was a big move by him. He could have just stayed silent, but I think that's a situation where
nationally broadcasted
behind
this man on campus.
They were going to figure out who he was, so it was a good idea for him to step forward and admit fault. But in that moment, I understand you're excited. I've rushed the court before, back when SLU beat Butler a couple years ago at Chaffetz Arena. But the most important thing there is safety. I think you got to consider, the players on the floor, the safety of the other people that are in the stands that aren't rushing the court. And this guy just showed blatant disrespect for Jamari Traylor. And then afterwards, he caught the wrath of a Kansas assistant who put him in a headlock. Tommy, you saw that, right?
Yeah, I don't know if I agree with that, but I don't think anyone is really that upset about it.
Yeah, I think Curtis Townsend did the right thing, and there was really no repercussions for that at all. But I think he's lucky Jamari Traylor didn't knock him out.
He is so lucky.
When is it advised to bump a 6'8 power forward at any moment, especially after a demoralizing loss?
Yeah, apparently the safest time to do it is after a demoralizing loss. Yeah. If that were to happen at a bar, you would end up in the hospital.
Yeah, I think so. I think so. But Tommy, you had another worst of the week that you saw this weekend. What was that?
Mine is kind of a mix of a worst and a best. I saw this clip today of there was a game at the College of Charleston. A University of Northeastern player went on a fast break, and the mop boy had come on the floor to clean up some sweat off the floor and apparently did not see this Northeastern player make the steal. And they almost collide under the basket. And I got to imagine this is the mop boy's, like, biggest nightmare of that job, to look up and see a player about to run into you. And actually, the Northeastern player did a pretty good job of avoiding
it. Yeah, I'm looking at it right now. He did a nice little Euro step kind of around the player. It was kind of a nice, nifty play. He was pretty much playing 5-on-6 there, but it was a fast break, so there wasn't anybody in front of him. That's just – you got to be court awareness. I mean, that's probably a tough job. That kid's probably on cloud nine because he gets to be on the floor for these games at the College of Charleston. But you got to watch your step out there. These are big, big athletes, and this kid's not very big. He could have gotten he could have gotten punished for that. So those are our worst of the week. We'd love for you guys to be interactive with this program. So if you do have something you'd like to submit for worst of the week, you can submit it in the comments section on our blog, on our website, builtontheborder.com. You can tweet it to us or send it to us via email at builtontheborderkc@gmail.com. Actually, correction, that's just builtontheborder@gmail.com, and then you can reach us on Twitter at BorderKC or on our website. So that wraps it up for this week's podcast. I want to thank Brody for coming in and joining us, and some limited insight today on Mizzou basketball because we didn't have a lot of time, but we'll get him in more, and we'll start talking some more Mizzou athletics, Kansas City Royals, Kansas City Chiefs, as we look forward to the start of the season on April 6th, and we look forward to what the Chiefs are going to do in free agency in the NFL draft. So we'll be covering that over the next couple of weeks. You can catch us again next week. We'll be putting out another podcast next Monday night. We promise to always hopefully have those out before 9 p.m. so you can listen to it throughout the week. But as always, thanks for joining us, however you may be joining us. For Tommy Watson and Brody Johnson, this is Tommy Randolph signing off. Have a good week, guys. Then sleep somewhere else at night, going back to Kansas City.